Before we continue on our lecture and give you some tasks, any questions on the assignment? I know people are installing software or set up software. Of course, just be careful with understanding the output of iPerf, like I showed you this morning. In fact, I don't think I can set it up. Like I showed you this morning, the iPerf calls, iPerf reports bandwidth and data transfer. If we can find an example. If I start the server, and then start the client, it runs its 10-second test, and just be careful with which value you're going to record for your results. We're interested in task 2. Task 1 is about the coverage. Task 2 is about throughput performance. How fast, or what's the maximum speed we can send? What's the maximum rate we can deliver data? Maximum throughput. In iPerf, you specify the bandwidth for the client to send, using the minus B option. That's the sending rate. When the test is finished, the server reports bandwidth. That's the throughput, or the receiving rate. That's the number you want, really. The other numbers are not important. The other numbers are mainly to tell you how the test is going, or to check that the test worked okay. But the number in the end, once you've done the test, at the server is the bandwidth value. In my case, 1.05 megabits per second. So, it's not data transfer, it's the bandwidth, which in effect is our throughput. And I guess so you're going to collect a lot of data. One of the plots would be interesting to see, would show us throughput against sending rate. That may be the first plot that you create under certain conditions. That is, most likely you'll see a shape similar to this. If you send at 1 megabit per second, then maybe you'll receive a throughput of 1 megabit per second. If you increase the sending rate to 2, then perhaps you'll receive a throughput of 2. That is, you'll report here 2 megabits per second and at the receiver 2 megabits per second. So you can plot those results. Up until some point where increasing the sending rate does not improve the throughput. So even if you increase the sending rate using the minus B option in iPerf, the throughput that you achieve will not increase. So you get a plot that looks something like this. Now, what happens as you increase greatly, it actually may even go down. I'm not sure what will happen, depends on how iPerf handles it. This indicates, okay, our maximum throughput, or our capacity of our wireless LAN, is around this level. We cannot send any faster. So that's what we're trying to achieve. Plot like this by collecting multiple results will give you that information. You may want to repeat such a plot with different conditions. I can't remember the details of some of the examples in the assignment instructions. For example, one of them was using one computer as the source versus using two computers. So maybe you'll get a different plot in that case. Sometimes it will not change. Maybe you could change whether to use RTS, CTS or not. You can set the RTS threshold in your access point and in your client. That will change whether RTS, CTS is used or not. You may see small differences in throughput on those parameters. Other plots that you may have, For example, let's say you were excellent and tested with three clients. That is one computer, one laptop, two laptops, and three laptops. Well, you can report that in different ways. Let's say this is maximum throughput, and this is the number of laptops or clients. Maximum network throughput. Maybe you'll get a result like that. So, interested in throughput versus sending rate, and if you can do that for different conditions, then you may be able to report the maximum throughput versus those conditions. When I say different conditions, I mean different setups for your experiments. Multiple number of laptops, maybe different parameter values. So in that part, you just need to submit the data, just as some raw spreadsheet, as well as a short report that gives such plots, summarizes your experiment setup, like the computers you used, the parameters you used, if relevant, in a table or in a set of dot points is okay. You don't have to explain in detail. There's no detailed introduction needed, just a summary of the setup such that if I wanted to repeat your experiment, I could, because you've given me all the details, the results, and definitely some discussion of those results. Why is the throughput just 5 megabits per second? And that's what you need in part 2. Part 1, what you need to submit is simply the data and one or multiple maps. That is, showing the coverage, the approximate signal strength in different locations across your given area. So any questions? Because the assignment's due when? Next week. Today is the 8th. It's due next Wednesday. Next week will be too late for questions. How do you check your IP address? If you're using Linux, then ifconfig. The other students have had a lab and covered that. Ifconfig. It shows there my wireless LAN interface, which I'm using, has an IP address of 10.10.3.101. Ifconfig is the command. You can also use the graphical user interface, and I think if you right-click on that network icon, the wireless LAN icon, it will show you some connection information. Any other questions on the assignment? I've said to some people before the approximate time it should take, maybe the coverage tests. Some people I've seen are doing the coverage tests, have been doing them. That may take several hours. 1 or 2 hours of just walking around, or 1 hour perhaps. You only need to do the coverage test once, so long as you get it correct. That is, allocate 1 hour to go around to your locations, do the tests. You don't have to come back tomorrow and do it again. Just do it once. Okay. So if everything's okay, then you should be getting 100% in the assignment. Mm-hmm. When you're using which?
Insider.
What does it show?
It shows only the max data.
It doesn't show any power level?
No. Oh, show the
RSSI.
Yes.
The RSSI is an indicator of power level. It's just a relative indicator. That is, and that's what you want. You have some access point somewhere and you with your laptop and you're running some software, Insider, NetStumbler, Kismet, whatever software you're running. It receives signals from multiple access points and it reports them in the software. And the signal strength is reported in different ways. It depends upon the drivers, the wireless cards, and the software. So a common way, you'll see something called RSSI, Received Signal Strength Indicator, an indication of the strength of the received signal. So that's an indicator of the strength. You need to be careful. You can use that just as a relative measure. That is, you should be able to work out what's the maximum and minimum. It may be between 0 and 100. In some cases, it may be 0 to 255. You should be able to detect that. You put your laptop near an access point, and if you get a received signal strength of 250, then most likely it's this case. If you get a received signal strength of 90, then it's most likely this case. No, relative amplitude. So that's the problem here, that these numbers don't map to a particular value. Or we don't know the mapping. They do map to a particular value, but different devices may use different mappings. So in some cases, like we saw when I demonstrated on the laptop, mine gave an absolute power level, measured in dBm or milliwatts. So that's the preferable data if you can collect it, but if you cannot collect it, this is okay. This is an absolute value, this is some relative value, which is all we need in the end, because what we want is a rough indicator of where is the signal strong across the campus, and where is it okay, and where is it weak, and where is it non-existent. So I don't care in the end on your map whether it's 99 or 98. That's strong. I care the difference between 98 and 2. There's a big difference there. Yep. Okay. Maybe after the lecture we can try and debug that problem. Some maps, the way to present the information on a map, sometimes you'll see with colour-coded information. That is, where the signal strength is strong, you have one colour, and where it's medium, it's another colour, and very weak, another colour. And there's no signal, then you have no colouring. That's a way to graphically present such a map. There's no one correct answer in that case. Just try and present it what you find would be useful. Any other questions while we're at it? We can address some at the end of the lecture or after the lecture if there still are. Let's spend 10 minutes looking at the performance, and then we'll give you a task to complete for Mac. Mac layer performance. So we care about often how well we can, or how fast we can transfer data. That is, some measures of performance of our medium access control. We've seen the physical layers in 802.11 have different data rates. For example, a common physical layer is 802.11g, which has a maximum data rate of 54 megabits per second. But with the MAC schemes that we've just gone through, basic access and RTS-CTS, there are many overheads introduced. So the resulting throughput that we get is much less than 54 megabits per second. So what are some of the factors that impact upon the MAC performance, medium access control? Like I said, we have some raw data rate from the physical layer, but there are overheads. What are the overheads? The MAC layer has to do different things. Has to provide addresses, has to provide retransmissions to offer reliability, has to manage the network, that is, has to provide some features such that we can join and locate an access point. Overheads. So we can classify the overheads as the frame headers, is one overhead. And we know that from many protocols. That is, if we have some data that we want to send, this data normally has some other control information associated with it, at least a header and sometimes a trailer at the end. So the time to transmit these means time not spent sending data. So if we think of throughput, that is the rate at which this data is delivered to the destination, then transmission of the header and the trailer introduce overheads. So that's one form of header, one form of overhead. There are some frames which carry no data. We've seen the ACK frame, RTS, CTS, and the beacon frames for joining the network. We have to transmit them, but they have no data. So with respect to bring data to the destination, they introduce another overhead. So there are individual frames, like an ACK, which is an overhead in terms of data performance. And then there are times when we don't transmit. That is, we have our laptop is not sending anything. No frames are being sent. Because it's following the procedures of weighting these different interframe spaces. The short interframe space, the DCF interframe space. And because it's backing off, again, just a time not transmitting. That's an overhead or a waste of transmission opportunity. But we must do it because it's part of the protocol to ensure that we have reliability and fairness. And in the cases that we do transmit but the receiver doesn't receive it, that's also an overhead. And we have to retransmit. So if we transmit one data frame but there's a collision and then sometime later have to retransmit it, then from the receiver's perspective, how much data do we receive in a period of time? The first one, where there was a collision, is not received. If there's a collision, the receiver will not successfully receive this data. So all that time from when we started the divs, and we had to back off again, we had a collision, all those steps in here, until this data gets successfully received at the destination, that's the total time just to get one piece of data to the destination. So all these overheads mean even though our data rate may be 54 megabits per second, our throughput, the rate at which we deliver data, is much less. And that's what you're measuring in your assignment. We would like to know what it is. So let's do some approximate calculations. And the approximation we'll take is just looking at, well, what's the maximum we could achieve if there were no collisions? In the perfect sense, in the perfect case. To do some calculations, we need to know some parameter values. And as we've said before, different physical layers use different parameters. In the examples we've gone through in the class, I used a physical layer of 802.11b, which is the old 11 megabit per second physical layer. We saw we had a DIFS of 50 microseconds, short interframe space of 10, slot time, minimum and maximum contention window values. Remember, we choose a random number for our backoff between 0 and CW. CW is initially 31. Every time we retransmit, we effectively double that up until the maximum. In different physical layers, there are different values, different parameter values, to suit those physical layers. So if we wanted to do different examples, we'd have to use these numbers if we're, say, considering 11G, which is the most common technology today. You don't have to remember the values. They would be given. Just know where to use them. So let's do an approximate calculation of what's the best throughput we could achieve if we had no collisions. Everything was perfect. That is just one laptop transferring data to one access point. No one else nearby, therefore there will be no collisions. Let's make some assumptions to get started. So we know that if we transfer a large data frame, it's going to be more efficient than transferring a small data frame. Because with a small data frame, the other overheads, interframe spaces, headers and so on, will be significant compared to the data. So let's consider a large data frame. Large, in our case, let's say it's 1,500 bytes. In fact, that's the largest amount of data we can put inside our frame that a typical LAN will support. Ethernet only supports this value, so that's the most, usually the largest that we use. And let's consider basic access. Because we're going to make the assumption we're in a perfect world and there's going to be no collisions, then basic access is going to be better than RTS-CTS. Because RTS-CTS has extra overheads. Data rate, 11G, 54 megabits per second. So what happens? Well, we know the basic scheme. We have diffs, back off, transmit data, and that transmission of data includes some time of transmitting a header in here. So in fact, this is the data frame, but it includes a header and the real data that we want to transfer. A short interframe space. And remember how this works is as soon as someone receives that entire data frame, they don't check whether the medium is busy, they just wait this short interframe space and then transmit an ACK immediately. And once the source or the original source receives the ACK, that data transfer is complete. So this 1,500 bytes of data has been transferred from source to destination and it took this amount of time. Total time. So throughput is simply the amount of real data that we delivered divided by the total time. In the best case, if I want to transfer a lot of data and there's just the one computer transferring, then what we have to do is simply repeat this all the time. This is the first 1500 bytes. Then I've got a lot of data to transfer. Let's say a 1 megabyte file. So I transfer in the first frame, and then when I finish, I do the same. Diffs, back off, data, short interframe space, ACK. And then the next frame, it just repeats for as much data that I have to transfer. So to work out what the maximum throughput, if we just consider one case, because the second case is going to be exactly the same. Same amount of data divided by the same time. And the third case will be the same. Therefore, we can just calculate the throughput if we were transferring one large 1 megabyte file can be calculated in this case as the amount of data per frame divided by the total time for one frame. And the slide gives the values, we'll do that. So what's the total time, T, in this case? Well, diffs, we're using 802.11g, so if you go back one slide, it's 28 microseconds in this example. We'll come to the back off in a moment. Short interframe space is 10 microseconds. Data size. We have 1,500 bytes. We have to add a header and a trailer. And let's say the header and trailer is a total of 34 bytes. So in fact, the total data frame, so we have 1,534 here. So the transmission time, we have 34 plus 1,500 divided by the data rate, which is our 54 megabits per second. 1,534 bytes divided by 54 megabits per second. You have to convert bytes to bits. Let's find the answer. I don't have it up there. Just to be clear. Does anyone calculate it for me? What is the total time? I don't have it here either. I need my calculator. I have the total time. I want the intermediate value. We have 1,534 bytes, convert to bits times by 8, divided by 54 megabits per second, so divided by 54 will give us 227 microseconds. So that's the time here. Diffs 28, here 227. Short interframe space 10. ACK, again, we need to know the size of the acknowledgement. And in this case, we're using the typical size of 14 bytes. 14 bytes times by 8 to convert the bits divided by our data rate of 54 megabits per second. Two microseconds, approximately. So we need to find the total time. What's the back-off time? How long do we back off? Well, it changes every frame. That is, we randomly choose a value within some range, and frame, we may choose the random value 3, the next time it may be 27. Over multiple frames, if we choose a random number within some range many times, we can look at the average value. So if we're choosing between 0 and 15, the average is midway. So here we've said, on average, the number of slots that we'll have to back off is 7.5. We back off exactly 7.5 slots, but in the first frame it may be 3. 3 slots here. This one may be 10, this one may be 22, and so on. Add them all up, divide by the count, and you get the average back off slots. If you're choosing randomly but within some range, in this case let's say the average is 7.5. Halfway. And each slot is 9 microseconds, so that means on average the back off is 7.5 times 9, which is what? 67, 68. So the total time is just the sum of these 5 values. Diffs, average back off, time to transmit the entire data frame, short interframe space, and ACK, which is what? 96, 108, 135 microseconds. The total time, let's say T, it was 335. What did I say here? All right, I rounded some numbers here. 334 microseconds. So 1,500 bytes of data every, on average, 335 or 334 microseconds. And that gives us the average throughput that we can achieve, which turns out to be about 36 megabits per second. So that's the best we can the best that we can do. Because this assumes there are no collisions. There's only one person transmitting. Everything's perfect. In real life, there may be others transmitting, there may be collisions, and things will slow down. That is, in real life, T could be much larger. The larger this value, the smaller our throughput. So it just gives us a rough way to approximate what is the best we can achieve with our wireless LAN performance. Has anyone done any tests so far? Has anyone seen any throughput values for their IPERF tests? I know some people have done some. When I did some quick test the other day, I got about 22 megabits per second, which is much less than this theoretical maximum. But if we consider RTS, CTS, there's some extra frames and extra interframe spaces, so it brings us down to about 33 megabits per second. In real life, we'll have collisions and deference from other people transmitting, and it will come down even further. So that's an indicator of performance of our MAC layer. What we'll do now is give you the task. At the end, we'll cover those final issues. Give you a task from last year's exam. So take a sheet of paper each, and we'll just go through the one question from last year's exam. And the question is really about the examples we did this morning and last week about the basic access mechanism, drawing such a diagram, and then doing again for RTS-CTS. So it's not much different from what we've done in the lectures. So the piece of paper coming around just has three lines on it. The idea is that you draw the steps that occur for each of the stations in this setup. So, the conditions. We have a wireless LAN, one access point, two clients, A and B. Both clients are within range of the access point, so they can transmit and receive from the access point, but outside the range of each other. So here we have the hidden terminals problem. It's like access points in the center of the room, client A is at this end, client B is at the other end. The transmission range is only 7 metres, means they can transmit to the access point but not to each other. So A and B are hidden from each other. Fragmentation is not used. We haven't spoke about fragmentation, but if our frames are too large, then wireless LAN may fragment them into smaller pieces. Of course, the stations choose random numbers, but to make sure that you calculate the same values that I calculate, I told you which random numbers they choose. That is, the first time client A has to choose a random number, it chooses the value 7. If it has to choose another random number, it will get 10. If it's another one, 23. You shouldn't have to do any more than that. And here are the parameters. I'll show the parameters again after we read the question. So the question: assume a client A has data of payload, that is the real data or the actual data that's put inside the data frame, of 1080 bytes, and they want to transmit at time 0 microseconds. So to make things easy, you can count in terms of microseconds. Start at time 0. Client B has data to send, same size, also to the access point, 160 microseconds later. Draw that diagram that we've drawn in the lecture on that piece of paper. First case, assume the RTS threshold is 1,500 bytes. Second case, assume it's 500 bytes. What's that mean? So people don't do it wrong at the start. What's this RTS threshold mean? What's the difference between case 1 and case 2 in this question? If you didn't get that, you would lose a lot of marks in the exam. What's the difference? Case 1 and case 2. What's the RTS threshold used for? Help him out. You've got a laptop. It's got wireless LAN. Your laptop. Have you ever transferred data over wireless LAN? Have you ever looked at the configuration parameters? Have you seen RTS threshold? If not, you can have a look on your laptop and eventually you'll find a configuration parameter. But how RTS threshold is used is that it tells us which mode to use, basic access or RTS CTS. We want to use RTS CTS for larger packets. So, if the data or the payload is larger than the threshold, use RTS CTS. If it's less than the threshold, use basic access. So the difference between the two cases, case 1, the threshold is 1,500, the data is less than that. Therefore, use basic access. Case 2, the data is greater than the threshold, therefore use RTS CTS. So the first set of diagram you'll draw on one side, part 1, is using basic access. The second one, using RTS CTS. Do basic access first. When you finish, let me know. Here are the parameters. So spend 5 or 10 minutes on that, because that's all it's worth in the exam. Don't find the answers from the website.
Where's the question? It's in last year's exam, midterm exam. On the website, the question here, the question is draw the diagram. Sorry.
Client A starts at 0, client B has data to transmit at time 160. So that should give you all the details you need. There was one thing that I forgot in this question. There's another parameter. ACK timeout. You may need that in one case. And the value I used was 30. you need to draw this diagram of the steps, and as you go, try to put the numbers on the timing, because the later questions ask you about what time did this thing happen. So both the steps and the time it takes to complete those steps, because that's also important. Don't try to draw it to scale either. You'll find it very hard to do. Although it's useful if you did, it's hard to draw such a diagram to scale, because sometimes something's very large compared to the other values. So just draw it such that you can see the different steps. The diagrams I drew on the board were not to scale. Just to help those out that don't have a calculator, what's the transmission time of our data frame? First one to calculate, let us know so we can tell everyone else. 160 microseconds. Is that exact?
Yeah.
Maybe. Let's check. I thought it was different. Maybe I did it wrong. Anyone else have an answer? Nope. 160? Nope. No. It's very close. The data frame. So with the header, which is... So let's say the transmission time of the data frame. microseconds. Because it's both the data, 1080 bytes, plus the 27 bytes of header. That's a useful value when you draw your diagram and see how long things take. Also, of course, always be careful between the units. Megabits per second, often the data rate is reported in bits per second. Data is often reported in bytes. You need to convert them, multiply by 8 and so on. I'll try to use the notation of a lowercase b for bits and uppercase b for bytes. And where possible, I may also write bytes in full. If you don't know where to start, then you need to remember or look at your notes as to what's the basic steps. Diffs, back off, transmit the data, short interframe space, ACK. They are the 5 basic steps. Of course, sometimes they may be interrupted, but start there. How long does computer A back off in the first instance? Anyone have an answer? How many microseconds does computer A back off? Why 630? How many? 63. Slot time is 9. Slots is 7. 63. Where do we draw? diffs is 28 microseconds with 11G. So if we start at 0, finish at 28, back off a random number of slots, but I told you that the random number it chooses in the first instance is 7. So back off 7 slots. I'll write it as back off 7. Each slot takes 9 microseconds. So the total back off time will be 63 microseconds, taking us from 28 to 91. I'll just record the running time here, not the back off time, but the time as we go. And then we transmit data. We transmit the data frame. Of course, we need to also look at computer B, because computer A and computer B are doing things in parallel at the same time. They're independent. When's the data finish? So that's the first steps of computer A, but now look at computer B and see what it does. Sorry, the piece of paper I gave you has A, B, and C. But I think the question refers to A, B, and access point. So treat C as the access point. That is, on the piece of paper, you have A, B, and access point. There's no C. C is the access point. I'll do it that way as well. A, B, access point. So don't forget about computer B, because the operation of computer B will impact upon what computer A does. We've said at time 0, computer A had data to transmit. At time 160, computer B did. Somewhere here. So now look at what computer B does. necessarily. Remember what's happening here, or the scenario that is computer A, access point, computer B, both want to transmit data to the access point. Computer A starts or wants to transmit at time 0, computer B at time 160. A and B are outside of each other's range. Anything that A transmits, B knows nothing about. Similar, anything that B transmits, A does not hear. Of course, the access point hears. So, computer B, you should look at what steps it takes, starting at time 160. Diffs, back off, data. It will, if during the diffs or the back off, one of the stations detects someone else transmitting, then they'll defer. But if they don't detect anyone else transmitting, they'll just continue with their procedure. That's what you need to determine. I just mark in red just to indicate during this period of time, access point, I've drawn access point down the bottom, computer C perhaps in your case, during this period of time, from 91 to 255, access point is receiving the data from computer A. But what's happening at computer B? That's the key to this, to the solution. In this scenario, A and B cannot hear each other, and that's key in this question. That is, when A transmits, B does not know that A is transmitting. That's why I do not draw a red line on B, just on the access point. If this is B and this is the access point, only the access point is receiving here, B is not. It's receiving a signal, but the signal is so weak that it just ignores it. So it's key to recognise in the topology of this question that A and B cannot hear each other. And that will impact upon what happens, because I drawn the red line to indicate access point. In my case, I've drawn the access point on the third line, A, B, access point. The access point is hearing or receiving something at this point in time. It's the data being transmitted from A. B is not receiving that. B is too far away. So B would just follow its normal procedure, that is, check if anyone's transmitting. If no one's transmitting, then the medium, that is, the medium is idle. The medium must be idle for the duration of diffs. From B's perspective, it is. Because it cannot hear what A is sending. And then B would do its normal procedure of back off. What's the back off, number of back off slots B chooses? How many back off slots do we have? Three. B chooses three as the random number here, that's at the top, which means 60, no it doesn't, it means 3 times 9, 27. If we start at 160, diffs of 28 brings us to 188. 3 times the number, or the slot time, 3 times 9 is 27. We would finish the back off at 215 time 215. And when we finish the back off, we transmit. And since the data is the same size, it takes 164, so 215 plus 164, 379. A does not hear that. Access point does hear that. So in addition to this red line, we also have from 215 up to 379. Receiving a signal. Hence we get a collision. There's a time at the receiver, the access point, at which the frames from both A and B overlap. That is, they're received at the same time. And we assume, to make things simple in our analysis of wireless LANs, if that's the case, access point cannot understand either of those frames. They are both lost or ignored or not understood. That is, it cannot determine what data was actually sent, because these signals overlap with each other and it cannot decode what the data was. So given that, there's going to be no acknowledgement coming back for either A or B. They're going to finish the data transfer, wait for an ACK timeout, and realize something's gone wrong. Retransmit. Start again. Diffs, back off, using the new random number. Transmit if possible. So continue from there. So there's going to be a timeout. That's what we indicate here. That I finished transmitting the data. I'm waiting for an ACK. I'm waiting. No ACK received. And in this case, we assume that ACK timeout interval is 30 microseconds. So 30 microseconds after I've transmitted the data, I realize something's gone wrong. I haven't received my ACK when I should have received an ACK. Indicates that my data didn't arrive. Start again. Diffs, back off, and so on. That happens at 285 for computer A and at 409 for computer B. So look at the diffs, the next back off, and see who gets to transmit or if there's another collision. Yeah, the ACK timeout I forgot to include in the question. It's 30. So this really is illustrating the first attempt. Diffs, back off, transmit data, nothing comes back. Time out, now we retransmit. And retransmission, follow the same steps. Diffs, back off. So long as no one else was transmitting during that diffs and back off period, then transmit the data. And it should be the case because we know already A and B cannot hear each other. The access point's not sending anything yet. So diffs, back off. I'll try and get the timing somewhat to scale. Diffs is 28. So 285 plus 28, which is 313. Back off. In the second case, well, when we retransmit, we choose a new random number. In this case, we chose 10. So 10 slots. 10 times 9 is 90 microseconds. We'd finish that back off, which would bring us to, what, 403. And because the access point's not transmitting, we'll confirm that for sure in a moment. Well, it's not because B is not transmitting. Transmit the data. From 403. Data is the same length as before, 164, so that will take us to 567. And once again, computer B will follow its normal procedure because it cannot hear this data. Diffs. Which brings us to 437, 28. Back off. And computer B chooses a random number, 20 in this case. It gets interesting. 20 would bring us to 20 times 9 is 180, would bring us to 617. That's when it would finish its back off. But something else is going to interrupt it. Because at time 567, up until that time, B was not transmitting. It was still backing off, doing nothing, checking that anyone else is transmitting. B cannot hear A, so it thinks no one's transmitting. But then at this time, because the data is received by the access point, no collision, wait a short interframe space, send an ACK. Short interframe space is 10, ACK is 20. So that will bring us to 567 plus 10 is 577 plus 20, 597. The SIFS is nothing. It's a timer counting. Yeah, it doesn't hear. Yes, yes, you're right. That is my... That will extend to there. Okay, you're correct. The SIFS is just a time where the access point is really switching from receive mode into transmit mode. It takes a short amount of time. Then it transmits the ACK. And who receives the ACK? Of course, computer A will, because A is within range of the access point, as does B. B is within range of the access point. Since B receives the ACK, its back off is interrupted by that acknowledgement. It was backing off, counting down, counting down, counting down. Ah, someone's transmitting. Suspend this countdown defer. We don't have to show deferral. We can show it. And then when they stop transmitting, we have to continue. So what's happened so far? The ACK of this data has been received by computer A. That's done. So we just need to finish computer B. When we find that the medium is idle again, diffs, continue the back off. Someone got what? What value did you get? 859. Anyone else got a value, either the same or different, for the total time it takes, that is the last time, when the last ACK is received? Of course, we've run out of time, so let's quickly give the final steps. Computer A's finished, transfer the data, everything okay. B was interrupted. When the medium becomes idle again, no one else is transmitting, it restarts diffs. So that will go from 597 plus 28, which is what? 625. At this time, and it doesn't start a new back off, it continues its old back off. How many slots remaining? Five. Everyone agree? I'll trust you. Why? It did 437 through to 577, which is 140, which is 140 times 15 times 9. Is that what we've got? 15. No, that's not right. What have I missed? Something's wrong. 437 to 577. Is 140, and we needed to do 20 times 9, we needed to do 180, so yes, we've done 140, we need to do 180, we had 40 left, which is 5. So we have 140 microseconds completed, which is 15 slots, 15 full slots. 5 left, 5 times 9 is 45, so bring us to 670. Transmit the data, takes another 164, which is 7834. ACK, 844 because of the SIFs, and what's the last one? 20. 864. That's the easy question. The second part asks you to do the same, but using RTS-CTS. So that's your homework for this week. And enough for today. Make note of what we did there. Come and ask me about the assignment if you wish. Of course, this is from last year's exam and the answers are online in the exam. But try to do the RTS, CTS one before you look at those answers. If you can do that, then you can get 19 marks. That's 20% of the exam, correct?